Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks for listening to City of Champions Radio. This is the latest edition of the Gospel of Hockey. Just about a month since our last broadcast of this nature, I'm Matt Geica, one of the co-editors at City of Champions, found at cityofchampionsports.com, where we talk all things Pittsburgh sports. But as you may know, the Gospel of Hockey is only about pucks, so we're going to be discussing the Pittsburgh Penguins, the NHL, and some RMU hockey right near the end of the coming half hour or so. I'd like to welcome in at this time my always co-host on the Gospel of Hockey. His name is Larry Snyder. How is the week treating you so far, Larry?
Oh, it's been an interesting week so far. I've made some visits to Youngstown Radio, Sports Radio 1240, and I've trying to stay warm as the temperatures seem to be dropping down into a deep freeze coming into this weekend. To get away from hockey for just a moment, the RMU men's lacrosse is supposed to play this Saturday at 11 a.m. and it might be in single digits. So this is going to be interesting.
Oh, I'm well aware. And for the listeners who don't know, I work in the RMU Sports Information Office. And Larry is our PA announcer for both hockey teams, the men and the women, but he also fills in on some other sports, lacrosse being one of them. Let's just say this has been a topic of discussion, how we're playing at 11 a.m. and it's going to be freezing and maybe some snow. So should be interesting and something we mercifully don't have to worry about when it comes to the sport of hockey, although I guess this year RMU playing outside in Toledo over the New Year holiday, and last year the Penguins were in Chicago outside, but normally not the domain of hockey writers and hockey broadcasters like ourselves. Before we get into the meat of today's show, I want to let you know you can tweet us a question at our site account, city_of_champs_, or at my account or Larry's account on Twitter. I'm Matt Geica, and Larry is Larry_N_Snyder. And all of that information is at cityofchampionsports.com as well, so you can access it there. And we thank you in advance for your participation if you have anything you would like to discuss. And for us, looking at the slate today, it's going to be mostly Penguins, as I mentioned, to start. Larry, there are 2 months to go until the end of the regular season in the NHL, give or take. And despite a pretty unimpressive last 6 weeks or so for the Penguins, they're right around 500, in fact, with a couple of overtime losses thrown in since mid-December when they had one of the best records in the league. They've fallen off that pace a little bit, but still, after last night's win over Detroit, a very impressive victory and maybe the best the Penguins have looked in quite some time, they're just a point back in the Metropolitan Division standings, one behind the Islanders, who have had a terrific season. But I guess it puts it all in perspective, doesn't it? This team created quite the cushion in the opening couple of months, and even though they've had some players out of the lineup, they've had their struggles, no matter who's been healthy and ready to go, still they're right there, and with 29 games to go, counting tonight's tilt in Ottawa, they have just as good of a chance as anybody of taking home another division crown.
It certainly is possible. They've certainly been playing cat and mouse with the Islanders for first place here. It seems to go back and forth. It depends on who's lost maybe a game or two games in a row, and then all of a sudden the other one will leapfrog the other and take over first place by a point, no more than two. So I do think that the Metropolitan Division, you know, first place in the division is still up for grabs, and I think the Penguins are certainly in the mix, 31-15-8 right now. And also, they are in fifth place in the National Hockey League's Eastern Conference overall. And as we know, the top eight get to go, you know, to the playoffs. So the Penguins staying right in there. But, you know, their Metropolitan brothers are making it close. The Rangers, I think, are only a point or two back, and the Capitals are in there. So along with the Islanders, it's getting kind of tight here in the Metropolitan.
It's extremely tight. It's about as tight as one could imagine at this point. The Pens and the Islanders right there at the top, and then just 2 points back of the Penguins with 68 are the Washington Capitals in third. And then the New York Rangers in fourth with 67 points. So if you need a refresher in the NHL, you get an automatic playoff bid if you're in the top three of any of the four divisions. Of course, two in the Eastern Conference, two in the West. And then the next two best point totals make it to the playoffs. Right now it would be four from each division, but sometimes, in the case of last year, I think, five teams out of the Metro made the playoffs. So it is possible that you could have that scenario, but right now it looks like it's unlikely, although the Florida Panthers may have something to say about that. They're four behind Boston for that second and final wild card in the Eastern Conference. But these playoffs are going to be very interesting, and as of right now, any of those four teams we mentioned, the Islanders, the Penguins, the Capitals, the Rangers, could all finish in first place, and any of those could finish in any of the other spots in the top four and make the postseason. So I have a feeling this is going to go down to the end if trends continue, not being too, brave or controversial saying something like that, because it has been this tight for the most part all season. Last night, Larry, very encouraging, as I mentioned, a nationally televised game against the Detroit Red Wings always gets my juices flowing. Just seeing those two teams out there, those two uniforms clashing out there, reminds me of the 08 and the 09 Cup Final. I know I'm not alone in that, each team winning one of those. And while we're well past those teams, it's funny to look at, because those Detroit teams the Penguins used to play were some of the oldest and more experienced in the league, and now they're among the younger teams in the NHL, the Red Wings are, even though they're right near the top of the standings again. And the Penguins have had a great deal of turnover beyond the core of Crosby and Malkin and Fleury and Chris Letang. It's definitely two different franchises, but both still battling it out, now both in the Eastern Conference too. And the Wings came into last night's game winners of 9 of 10, but you wouldn't have known it by the way the Penguins completely controlled play in the opening period. Detroit with some pushback in the second, but the Pens getting the next two after getting the first two, so it ended up being a 4-0 lead, and really put it in cruise control from there. What was the most impressive part of last night's win for you, for the Penguins? For me, it was just the fact that they were able to get the depth scoring. Nick Spaulding getting a goal, Blake Como in his return to the ice. I made him my first star in City of Champions last night, and you also had Patrick Hornqvist scoring, so it's good to see him getting back on the sheet. And even Max LaPierre set up a goal with a nice drive to the net. David Perron ended up finishing that play. But really fun to see the Penguins roll some lines, and a lot of that has to do, I guess, with guys like Como getting back into the lineup healthy.
Well, I agree. I think the offense was very exciting last night. There's a stat. I don't have it right here in front of me, but Blake Como, the Penguins are like 7-0-2 if he gets on the score sheet. And, it was obvious he was back last night, and it bolstered the lines. I mean, I think part of the ups and downs that seemed to hit the middle of the season since about the middle to the end of December, has been, can certainly be attributed to, this player's out with the mumps, this player's out with a lower body injury, this one's out with an upper body injury, this one, is under concussion watch, and we just have not had everybody there. Everybody keeps clamoring for Jim Rutherford to, make another trade. We need another top six forward. Well, do we? Blake Como is finally healthy. Hornqvist is healthy. And, we're starting to get bodies back. It was my contention earlier this week when I was on Sports Radio 1240 when I was talking with John Rutter. Does Rutherford really need to look for another top six forward, or could he shore up the blue line crew a little bit, maybe add a veteran there? And, so I guess I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. Does Rutherford still need to tinker before the trade deadline coming up here in March? And, would it be more advantageous to maybe look for another, an older defenseman, to help out, because of the younger guys like Pilat and Harrington and those guys, to bring in somebody a little more seasoned, let's say, on the blue line crew?
I'm leaning more toward defense right now, I think, Larry, especially after last night. It was a nice reminder that Blake Como was on a pretty strong scoring pace. I think he was third on the Pens in goals, at least, when he broke his arm down in Florida on December the 22nd. So he missed about 15 games or so there. And you forget that even though he was signed for less than $1 million in the offseason, he looked to be a very good fit with Yevgeny Malkin and whoever may have been on the other wing. Last night it was Patrick Hornqvist, and in other cases it's been Bo Bennett, but neither here nor there. With Como up on the top six and with Chris Kunitz playing better on Crosby's wing, perhaps the Penguins should roll with that top six unit and maybe pick up a depth guy. There has been a couple of rumors, a couple of Toronto Maple Leafs, in fact. Daniel Winnick, a good possession, defensive-type forward, and also Mike Santarelli, more of an offensive type. I think he's reminiscent of, say, Steve Sullivan, who was with the Penguins a couple of years ago. Kind of a smaller player, but very dynamic in tight spaces. Those two guys have been rumored to be of interest to Jim Rutherford. But I think, especially with Christian Ehrhoff, we're not sure about him. You talked about people getting back on the ice. Well, with the exception of Ole Mata and Pascal Dupuis, who we are fairly certain both are not going to be coming back. Dupuis, it's still somewhat up in the air, but the Pens would have to go deep in the playoffs for him to return. Mata definitely out with shoulder surgery. But Ehrhoff's the only guy that's still on the shelf. He's been fighting the concussion symptoms lately, and the Penguins aren't sure when he's going to be getting back in the lineup. You mentioned Derek Pouliot. I like his potential. I'm not sure I like him against every matchup in the NHL. I think he was a good matchup last night against a team like the Wings that likes to skate and doesn't play a particularly physical game. I think he might struggle in that area, and Mike Johnston has admitted as much. Mike Johnston, also Derek Pouliot's junior coach from when Derek was playing down in Portland of the Western Hockey League. But Pouliot really adds that offensive flair that there isn't much of once you get past Chris Letang, of course, on the Penguins' blue line, Letang having a Norris-caliber season. But I think Robert Bortuzzo is struggling. I'm not sure I like him to be a defenseman in your top six when the playoffs come around. So maybe I'm thinking more about the blue line in terms of additions at the trade deadline. There have been rumors from ESPN's Pierre LeBrun, reports, I should say, from him, of course, he being definitely a legit source for information. Cody Franson, Maple Leaf as well. Jeff Petrie of the Edmonton Oilers, some names out there. Scott Hannon and Jan Heda out west, other veterans who are available. So there are some names there. We have a couple of weeks to go before the deadline. But, yeah, Larry, I'm starting to lean toward defense. What do you think about that?
Well, I was sort of leaning that way because in some ways, I mean, you know, Pouliot's been up for a few games, and then he goes back down to Wilkes-Barre Scranton, and the same happens with Harrington. So I'm not sure what that says, that Mike Johnson's not completely satisfied with them, and if he's not, if he can't, as you say, find the right combinations to want to be out there, then perhaps it's time to go looking for a more veteran defenseman who you know, might fit this style and what Mike Johnson wants to do, and let the guys like Pouliot and Harrington, you know, simmer a little bit longer for the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins before they're brought up full-time to the roster to, you know, to make that difference to replace guys like Bortuzzo or Martin down the road. So, yeah, I definitely am leaning more towards a defenseman. I think we've got enough offense. And especially, yes, with the latest development with Christian Ehrhoff, I definitely think, you know, it's time to look for another member of the blue line and, you know, bolster the defensive core a little bit, and we'll see what happens from there. You know, somebody on one of the social media sites was talking about the fact that he really likes the Penguins and he liked what he saw last night, but that's when the Penguins are almost, you know, they're like 95% healthy. And the question is, can they stay healthy all the way to go deep into the Stanley Cup playoffs? And I guess that's the other half of the equation, or the question is, can these guys, you know, stay healthy long enough and stay all together on the ice? Or, you know, because it seems like, you know, this one gets dinged up and misses a few games, and that one gets dinged up and misses a few games. Can we get healthy and stay healthy from now till April and May and June?
Boy, that is the question, isn't it? That has been an issue for this team. It has lost more than its fair share of man games due to injury. It almost seems like since they came across the street to Consol Energy Center from Old Mellon Arena, there has been something going on there. And that's obviously some conjecture on my part. Who knows what is exactly happening, or if it's just a string of bad luck. That's what my bet is. I do think the Penguins have great strength and conditioning staff. I think every NHL team does, and I think Pittsburgh is definitely one of the epicenters for the modern medical industry. So there's really no excuse in terms of that either. So maybe it's just we chalk it up to a fluke, but you can't really ignore the recent history that this team has had a very difficult time, a more difficult time than most, in keeping its roster together. Now, it's a sport like hockey that's physical. You can't expect to have everyone all the time ready to go. It's just not a reality. It's like football in that way, where someone's always going to be hurt. Someone's always going to be fighting through something, even if we, the general public, don't know about it. But at the same time, it is your responsibility to build up enough depth as an organization to withstand that. So maybe that is where I could think about adding another forward, because you never know when someone needs to get plugged in. And as we saw last night, Zach Sill took a seat. I don't think he's a very useful NHL player myself. I think he's kind of in that Craig Adams replacement level category right now, and maybe someone at Wilkes-Barre-Scranton could do the same job. When you see Blake Como get back into the lineup, and Bo Bennett also back into the lineup, that's a completely other topic, by the way, with Bo Bennett and his recent healthy scratches. But when those two guys are in the lineup, suddenly this looks a little bit more a lot like the team, actually, that we saw early in the season that really was steamrolling. In terms of Bo Bennett, let's bring him up a little bit here as we move along on the gospel of hockey about halfway through it. What do you think of the way the Penguins have handled him? Because it seems like they do want him to go to some of the more high-traffic areas, go to the front of the net. Mike Johnston in particular last night commended him for going to the net on the Nick Spaulding goal, I believe it was, in the second period that was tipped in, the Rob Scuderi shot, and some of the forwards crashed the goal, Bennett included. But I do wonder if he's just not cut out for that type of a role. I know he has to at least have that in his bag in case he needs to go into the corner and win a battle, but I still think he's better suited in a top-six role, in a top-six type of a situation more often than not, because I know they want to maybe see what he can do on the third line, and he can earn his playing time up with the big boys, so to speak. But I'm just not sure he's going to be able to show that much playing alongside Brandon Sutter, say, consistently, or even on the fourth line with Max LaPierre, which hasn't really happened. But your feelings on that? It feels to me like sometimes they're trying to jam a square peg into a round hole with Bennett.
Well, I think that summed it up best there at the end when you talked about, you know, where they're trying to plug him in at. And again, this is another one, you know, is he going to stay healthy all the way to April and May, you know, when you need him for the Stanley Cup playoffs? And that's that question we can throw against the wall all day long. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how his role, how he can fit into Mike Johnson's system. And I think right now we just got to take let's wait and see, you know, if he can stay on the ice and find his niche to where he's supposed to be out there. Our friend Alan Saunders over at the Pittsburgh Sporting News just tweeted out that it's going to be Thomas Greiss in goal tonight for the Pens up in Ottawa when they take on the Senators. And that was the other topic I was talking with John Rutter about earlier this week on Sports Radio 1240. And that was the fact, have we seen enough of Greiss? Have we seen enough to know that, you know, we can turn to him if we absolutely have to in the playoffs? It means, you know, something has drastically happened to Fleury, of course. But, you know, are you still satisfied with Greiss as the number two? And I definitely think we need to see more of him, and he needs to get more work here in the last couple of months just to give Fleury a break. And I just wondered what you thought about those who are clamoring a little bit more for, you know, Fleury to get a little more rest before the playoffs start.
It's an interesting topic. I'm one of those clamoring for Fleury to play a little less. And I know when he's playing as well as he has lately, that's really tough to do. You don't want to take him out of the net when he has a shutout streak of, what was it, more than 100 minutes, I know, or more than 160 minutes, actually, because he had back-to-back shutouts, including the one against the Calgary Flames on the road trip. He had, what, he played back-to-back games. He shut out the Oilers, then he shut out the Flames. And then Greiss was, I don't think, supported very well in that game up in Vancouver, the Penguins, to a large degree, were a no-show. Pretty strong term there, I know, but I think the team was a little worn out from the traveling and from laying it on the line in those two games, especially the game against Calgary, which was another really fine effort in recent days. But Greiss didn't have much of a shot. Didn't look great, and he actually handed the Canucks a goal with some poor stick handling behind the net. But in terms of just playing the position and tending goal, I think Greiss has been fine this year. I feel like he's fallen off a bit since early in the season, and you know, a lot of that is just not playing, in my opinion. I think he's not getting enough action to have a reasonable expectation to stay sharp. His save percentage has dropped down to about 9-10 or whereabouts. That's a little below average in the NHL. You'd like to see that be slightly higher. That's getting pretty close to what Jeff Zatkoff gave you last year as the primary backup. But I think Greiss is a better goalie, and I think if you give him more of a shot, he can help you carry more of that load. I mentioned at the start of the show 29 games to go for the Penguins in the course of 2 months, so a couple of pretty busy months, about 15 games per 4 weeks the rest of the way. So there's going to be plenty of opportunities, plenty of back-to-backs coming up, too, for Greiss to get some action, and I think it would behoove Mike Johnston and the Penguins to do that and to turn to him. I know Michael Pittock of Penn's Labyrinth, who I had on City of Champions Radio a couple of weeks ago, isn't a fan of Greiss. A lot of people have soured on him recently, but to that I say it's been a pretty small sample size for him, especially as of late. It's been Marc-Andre Fleury and more Marc-Andre Fleury, but at some point I think you have to lay off the accelerator a bit. I know we talked about this on our previous Gospel of Hockey with Alan Saunders, but I'm going to continue banging that drum if it's all right with you.
Well, I guess I want to see a little bit more before I'm ready to turn the page on Greiss. And, you know, that's my feeling at the moment, that sample size is still not enough yet to say that this was not a, you know, a good trade or a good pickup, because I don't know. I mean, you're going to be back at Jeff Zatkoff down from the American Hockey League level if you're not going to go with Thomas Greiss. And while Zatkoff can be a nice fill-in from time to time for Fleury, I don't think either one of us want to turn to Jeff Zatkoff if there's a catastrophe in the playoffs and figure he's going to be the one to carry you all the way to the Stanley Cup.
No, I'd be a lot more comfortable in that situation should it happen with Greiss. And really, this is all just patchwork, because with Fleury signed long-term and with both Matt Murray and Tristan Jarry down on the farm for the Penguins, well, Murray at the AHL level and Jarry still at juniors with the Edmonton Oil Kings of the Western Hockey League, those are the two guys that are going to be backing up Fleury. One of the two is going to be backing up Fleury, and maybe you're looking at a post-Fleury life, of course, somewhere way down the line, but Greiss, more of a stopgap. I think this topic is for the most part much ado about nothing, but like you said, it could be an injury or it could be poor play from number 29, and then all of a sudden you do have to turn to the backup. But if the Penguins are going to win the Cup, it's going to be with Fleury and net, I'm fairly certain, or at least make a decent run. So to a certain extent, not a topic that has you know, a lot of intrigue to it at the moment. Looking ahead, we have, the difficult schedule continues for the Penguins. They had the Red Wings, of course, last night, and I told you the Ottawa Senators this evening. So that one won't be the most difficult thing in the world as far as strength of competition, although it is at Ottawa. And the Senators, not at the bottom of the Atlantic Division or anything like that. They're a few points back of Florida for that fifth spot in the Atlantic Division. But after that, the Pens go to Chicago on Sunday, and then they host the Capitals next Tuesday. So a couple of fun ones against some high-profile teams. That should be enjoyable. Look for continued Penguins coverage on City of Champions Sports. I had my three stars up last night. I will endeavor to do that again tonight. Larry had your power rankings compilation. And that was interesting too, Larry. It seems like most of the national writers are seeing the Penguins back in that top third of the league, back in the top 10. Is that what you gathered as well from your search of all those?
Yes, that's what it seemed like to me, that the Penguins had been pushed down all the way to, you know, 12 through 15 in some of these power rankings, and now they were finally coming back up, as you said, to join the upper third of the league. And so I definitely think that, you know, they were impressed with that when they took two out of three on the Western road swing, you know, across Calgary, Edmonton, and Vancouver. And so I definitely think that the Penguins are being noticed again. But everybody's also thinking, you know, most of their comments are, you know, let's wait and see because they're a little bit up and down, you know, and they all have their various theories as to why, you know, the Penguins are up and down. And so they want to wait a little bit more and get another sampling size, maybe wait till the beginning of March before maybe they're ready to move the Penguins back up into a top eight or a top five situation.
Is that how you feel the Penguins are perceived right now? Most people, whether it be the writers, the broadcasters, the fans, maybe even the other teams and players, do you feel like that the Penguins are in that wait-and-see mode just because of the new leadership? It almost feels like this team is has been given some time this year because they have changed some things up personnel-wise, and as I mentioned, in leadership, head coach, and general manager. That's the feel I'm getting right now, at least. It's almost an uncertainty we haven't seen with the Penguins, who we are used to seeing people consider them to be one of the real favorites. This year, I'm not really feeling that, and you know, I'm wondering how that may affect the team down the line, if it has any effect at all. But at least from the outside, from our perspective, this is some new territory, at least. This feels almost like what it was back in 07, 08 when the team was on the rise, and folks weren't sure of how they were going to play at the end of the season and into the Stanley Cup playoffs. Of course, you still have some of the proven commodities in the lineup too. So it's been a very interesting season for me. I guess that's what I'm trying to say in a very long-winded way right now. It's been tough to really get a grasp on whether this team has met expectations or has not.
Well, I think part of this stems from the fact the first part of the season, they were playing very well. They had the number one, you know, power play in the league. Marc-Andre Fleury, you know, had some very nice stretches, and they had some 4, 5, 6 game win streaks in there. Now, since about towards the end of December, it's, you know, win a game, lose a game, win a couple, lose a game. And it doesn't always have the, you know, the rhyme or reason as to, you know, why do you lose to this team this night, but you turn around and look like world beaters. You know, again, like you get shut out by Vancouver, but you shut out Calgary and Edmonton the two nights before. And I think it just creates people are just not sure, you know, what's going on with the Penguins. And I think I'm not so sure it's so much that they're concerned about the coaching staff, Mike Johnson and his assistants, as they are wondering what Jim Rutherford is going to do and while he's going to continue to shape this team in terms of the direction it will go. And that will be interesting to see if he pulls the trigger on any deals at the trade deadline. But it's just been, you know, for the last month or so, it's been very up and down. Win a game, lose one, like I said. And it's been, you know, it's been a little bit scattershot. They've been shut out already here in February as many times as they were last season. And so it starts to create, whether it's fact or fiction, it starts to create this feast or famine viewpoint, I think, across the boards when other people are looking from the outside at the Penguins. It seems to be feast or famine with them when it comes to offense.
It has been a strange season in that regard, and I will give you that. I'll concede that fact, especially lately. And I almost felt like it was going to be like this early in the season as the team adjusted to the new style of play, the new coach, new teammates. But we've almost hit that rough patch later, or we have hit that rough patch later. And now at this moment, the Penguins trying to regain that equilibrium they had, and they had it pretty effectively. They had it going pretty well in the opening couple of months. So maybe that built up the expectation in my mind that they were going to keep rolling like they had in the past 5 years under Dan Bylsma, who, you know, playoff foibles aside and some of those failings and disappointments, largely due to expectations, of course, those are considered disappointments. But it was always pretty much a guarantee the Penguins were going to win 45 to 50 games in the regular season, lockout year notwithstanding, and they were terrific that year, too, in the regular season. This is usually what it's like for most teams. You do go through some ups and downs, and sometimes you have an extended stretch where the team isn't playing up to capability. But the good news for the Pens, and I mentioned this on my City of Champions TV Just a Minute video earlier this week, about 30 games to go, 29 games to go now in particular before this evening's game at Ottawa. And we've seen in the past teams like the Penguins of 09, like the LA Kings the last two times that they have gone all the way to the final, the only two times they've gone all the way to the final in this era, they really found their style of play and hit their groove in the final 30. That usually does go a long way toward determining how a team does in the playoffs. Not so much the last 10 games, which people tend to focus on, but more the last 30 or 40. That's been proven to be more indicative of how the playoffs will turn out. So it'll continue to be interesting, as it always is with the Penguins, and you can go to City of Champions, as I mentioned, for further coverage, opinion, and perspective on the team. Let's wrap up the show, Larry, with some college hockey. And speaking of, on our website, we have a couple of RMU hockey stories right near the top. We have your Atlantic Hockey Conference power rankings. The Colonials all but wrapping up the league with 3 weeks to go. They're off this week, but RMU with a nation-best eight-game unbeaten streak, 7-0-1 heading into this off week. Then they have four more games at the end of this month trying to lock up that number one seed for the Atlantic Hockey playoffs. Just a validation, as head coach Derek Schooley called it today on Trib Live Radio on his weekly spot with Ken Laird and Guy Junker. Coach Schooley saying it's a special moment for the program. 20 wins already, one shy of setting a new record, a new standard in that category. And after its huge second-half run last year to rebound from a two-win first half to go all the way to the NCAA tournament and win the Atlantic Hockey postseason prize, that was huge. But I think even more so this year, Larry, for me, I was curious, and I work with the team, full disclosure, of course, but I was curious to see and really rooting for the team to see if they could follow up and double down, I guess you could say, on that success last year. And they've really proven that was no aberration, that second half that we saw last year was really indicative of the true talent level and the true character of this program.
I think so, and it was even more galvanizing when they got to the Atlantic Hockey Conference Tournament and Terry Schaefer got hurt during the series against the Army Black Knights, and it was up to Dalton Isaac to come in and take over from there. And he was able to carry them all the way to the Atlantic Hockey Conference Championship, you know, working between the pipes, and he was there to get them, you know, to that game against Minnesota in the first round of the tournament. So I definitely think we, you know, the Colonials have, you know, a fine, outstanding goaltending tandem in Terry Schaefer and Dalton Isaac, and it starts there and works out, you know, across the ice through the defensemen and up to the forwards. They just said, yes, I think this season validates that what we saw last January to March or April, you know, that wasn't, as you said, an anomaly that just happened. It finally was everything coming together, you know, all up and down the board, forwards, defenses, defensemen, and goaltenders, and the system is really chugging along like a fine-tuned machine. They're a 9-point lead over the now second-place Bentley Falcons after they took a victory in a tie against Canisius last weekend. It dropped Canisius down. And it also dropped down in our power rankings a little bit, and Bentley moved up. And Bentley now is the only other team in the Atlantic Hockey Conference who got some votes in the others receiving votes section of both in the USCHO survey, you know, in their poll. And RMU continues to be in the other receiving votes category in the USA Today, USA Hockey Magazine poll. They were number 18 in the United States College Hockey Online poll, and it's nice to see them continue to move up in that poll. I wasn't sure what the tie with Canisius, whether that would drop them down one or, you know, they actually moved up another notch, and that was really good to see.
One thing I really like about dealing with these guys, they're not satisfied. And you hear that a lot about good teams and how they always want to strive for more. But even this weekend, they were not really pleased this past weekend. I mean, they weren't really pleased with how they performed against Canisius. The coaching staff and some of the players have admitted they felt a little tired, a little drained. They had to spend an extra couple of days up in Colorado Springs due to a winter storm after they swept Air Force up there, which was a huge moment for the program. And the weekend prior to that, they had been on the road, too, taking the long bus trip out to Holy Cross, out to Worcester, Massachusetts. And so they just felt like they needed this bye week in particular because they weren't satisfied with getting 3 points out of four. They beat Canisius, which at the time was the second-place team. They beat them in overtime, 2-1 on a Greg Gibson goal late in the sudden-death session. That was Friday night at 84 Lumber Arena. And then Saturday, a 1-1 tie against Canisius, even though they had a 1-0 lead. But not quite the high level of offense and just offensive pressure that we're used to seeing from RMU. That didn't show itself in this series. And the guys not satisfied. They said they thought they should have played better. And to my ear, I like to hear that at this time of year because you always want to have that standard to improve. And, you know, when you're in first place like they have been all season long, sometimes you can fool yourself into playing thinking that you're playing better than you really are. And I don't really see that with this team at all. So that much is promising. You don't want a team to be too hard on itself either. You want it to be able to enjoy some of its success. And I think the team has, with a record of 25-5 and even more impressively, 17-3-4 in Atlantic Hockey. They're looking to post one of the best records in conference in the history of this league. So they have accomplished a lot, but and this will be our last topic for the day that I want to bounce off you, but it's going to be a one-bid league, if you will. The only team that's going to make the NCAA tournament most likely, barring something really unforeseen, is the team that wins the postseason tournament. So even though if RMU wins the conference in the regular season, it'll be nice to put another banner up at 84 Lumber Arena on Neville Island, but at the same time, it's not going to get them into the tournament most likely because the strength of the conference is down. The conference has not played well in non-conference games, RMU accepted. The Colonials have a winning record, 3-2-1 in those games. But it's just a tough situation because you'd like to think if you win the regular season in a conference, you're going to be able to get one of those at-large bids. But with only 16 available and six leagues getting the automatic bid, it doesn't look like it's going to happen. So a tough situation for sure, Larry, I would say, for the Colonials to know they have to take the whole thing again.
Agreed, and that may be, you know, easier said than done because there are some teams out there who have some solid goaltending that might get hot at the right time. Canisius, with their combo of Riley Turner and Keegan Asmundson, you know, have played really well between the pipes this weekend, notwithstanding. And also now finally back, you know, doing well has been Gabe Antoni and Jason Argue for the Bentley Falcons, have become a pretty good goaltending tandem. Jordan Ruby has been playing well for RIT. So I and Matt Gaines back, I think, for Holy Cross. And so I think there's definitely some goaltending talent that, you know, if they catch fire at the right time, you ride the hot goaltender, you know, it could change things come tournament time. I really like the Colonials' chances during the Atlantic Hockey Conference tournament, but you don't want to assume anything because, as we said, you know, if somebody gets hot at the right time, their goaltending gets hot at the right time, or their offense is clicking at the right time. And, you know, you're going to have to wait and see how it's going to play out. But I agree with you. The Atlantic Hockey Conference is only going to get one team into the tournament, and it's going to be the tournament champion.
And you do wonder if RMU hopes to be a perennial playoff contender, if that's even feasible in Atlantic Hockey. I'm not sure if the feeling is among coaches, if you ask them in a candid moment, if they feel like Atlantic Hockey is getting better, staying the same, or getting worse in comparison to some of the other leagues. But I do know RMU is boosting its profile, and I wrote something for RMUColonials.com and City of Champions this week, posted today, that recruiting has gotten easier for not just head coach Derek Schooley, but the associate head coaches Matt Nicholson and Mark Workman. They're out there on the front lines of that recruiting battle, so to speak, and people definitely know who RMU is. And making the tournament last year, getting on ESPN2, that's a big deal. And even though RMU can't offer some of the things facility-wise that say a team like Penn State can, for sure, that's maybe on the extreme end of the spectrum with the endowment they got from Terry Pegula, the owner of the Buffalo Sabres. But it still stands that there are some schools in the region, some schools in the area that can offer a bit more in terms of facilities and definitely tradition. But with one decade under their belt, and now this is the 11th year for RMU men's hockey at the Division I level, they've done some great things over the past 5 years. They have the 13th best record out of 59 Division I schools over the past five seasons since joining Atlantic Hockey. So they're trending definitely in the right direction now. And the challenge, of course, will be to continue that. But one thing about college sports is that winning breeds winning, because more and more kids want to become part of that that successful atmosphere. And that's what Matt Nicholson was talking to me about this week when I was down there at practice. Things have gotten a bit easier, and even though you always have to give the hard sell in certain situations, it is going to become more of a self-perpetuating cycle in terms of success, and the Colonials have gotten the ball rolling in the right direction in that regard. Thanks so much for listening this week. I know that we have some folks out there wanting to know when we were going to get back at it with Gospel of Hockey, so sorry it took us so long, about a month since our last time, but we'll try to get a little more frequent as we head down toward the playoffs in both college hockey and the pros. Larry, I know that you might want to pump up a big weekend for the RMU women's hockey team coming up here at 84 Lumber Arena, so I'll let you go ahead and do that now.
Well, the RMU women are going to take on RIT this weekend, and it's going to be senior weekend for the Colonials. And they have six seniors, Maddie Colias, Katie Ferguson, Kelsey Gunn, Caitlin Scott, Aaron Stanuski, and Rebecca Vint are all seniors, plus junior Megan Eady is also going to be graduating early. She's got all her credits in place, and so she's also going to be leaving the program. So there's going to be seven players saluted on Saturday, and well-earned and well-deserved. But it's also a chance for them to, you know, solidify where they're going to be at in the playoff structure of College Hockey America. So it'd be nice for not only the seniors to go out on the winning note, but for the program as a whole to possibly get 3 or 4 points this weekend would certainly help them in the College Hockey America standing. So we wish Paul Colantino and his crew all the best this weekend as they take on the RIT Tigers.
And then a trip up to Penn State, I believe, to finish the regular season for the RMU women in the College Hockey America standings. They're kind of middle of the pack right now, but all the teams make the postseason, just like in Atlantic Hockey on the men's side. And this is the first year that College Hockey America has an automatic bid to the NCAA tournament. Didn't have that a couple years ago when RMU won it, and so they could not make it in to the eight that they qualify to try to win the national championship in women's hockey. So things have changed, and CHA now in the automatic bid category. So that is definitely a huge carrot for an RMU team that's had its struggles this season, especially early, but playing better since the Christmas break, and this is when you want to play your best hockey, whether it be in college or the pros. So we look forward to seeing how that wraps up, and we look forward to having you visit cityofchampionsports.com. That's your source on the fan-sided network for all your Pittsburgh news, and we try to cover all of it, as you have just heard on this show, not just the big teams like the Penguins, but the local collegiate clubs like RMU, University of Pittsburgh. We've got some Duquesne stuff on there, courtesy of Zach Weiss, Pittsburgh Riverhounds soccer coming up, and, of course, the Pirates ready to report to spring training, and the Steelers' opinion and coverage will continue all throughout the off season. He was Larry Snyder. I've been Matt Geica. Thank you so much for listening to City of Champions Radio here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm reminding you that when the radio fades, you know life's moving fast. It's been great to speak with you, and we'll talk to you next time right here.